The very first thing he does is fix me with those wonderfully brown eyes and say, "It's possible I'm too drunk to judge, but you might have something there." It's October 1920, and jazz is everywhere. I don't know any jazz, so I'm playing Rachmaninoff. I can feel a flush beginning in my cheeks from the hard cider my dear pal Kate Smith has stuffed down me so I'll relax. I'm getting there, second by second. It starts in my fingers, warm and loose, and moves along my nerves, rounding through me. I haven't been drunk in over a year, not since my mother fell seriously ill, and I've missed the way it comes with its own perfect glove of fog, settling snugly and beautifully over my brain. I don't want to think, and I don't want to feel either, unless it's as simple as this beautiful boy's knee inches from mine. The knee is nearly enough on its own, but there's a whole package of a man attached, tall and lean, with a lot of very dark hair and a dimple in his left cheek you could fall into. His friends call him Hemmingstein, Owen Bones, Bird, Nesto, Wemage, anything they can dream up on the spot. He calls Kate Stutt or Buttstein, not very flattering, and another fellow Little Fever, and yet another Horny or the Great Horned Article. He seems to know everyone, and everyone seems to know the same jokes and stories. They telegraph punchlines back and forth in code, lightning fast and wisecracking. I can't keep up. But I don't mind, really. Being near these happy strangers is like a powerful transfusion of good cheer. When Kate wanders over from the vicinity of the kitchen, he points his perfect chin at me and says, "What should we name our new friend?" "Hash," Kate says.
"Hashadad's better," he says. "Hasovich."
"And your bird?" I ask. "Wem," Kate says.
"I'm the fellow who thinks someone should be dancing."
He smiles with everything he's got, and in very short order, Kate's brother Kenley has kicked the living room carpet to one side and is manning the Victrola. We throw ourselves into it, dancing our way through a stack of records. He's not a natural, but his arms and legs are free in their joints, and I can tell that he likes being in his body. He's not the least shy about moving in on me, either. In no time at all, our hands are damp and clenched, our cheeks close enough that I can feel the very real heat of him. And that's when he finally tells me his name is Ernest.
"I'm thinking of giving it away, though. Ernest is so dull, and Hemingway. Who wants a Hemingway?"
"Probably every girl between here and Michigan Avenue," I think, looking at my feet to keep from blushing. When I look up again, he has his brown eyes locked on me.
"Well, what do you think? Should I toss it out?"
"Maybe not just yet." A slow number starts, and without asking, he reaches for my waist and scoops me toward his body, which is even better up close. His chest is solid, and so are his arms. I rest my hands on them lightly as he backs me around the room, past Kenley, cranking the Victrola with glee, past Kate, giving us a long, curious look. I close my eyes and lean into Ernest, smelling bourbon and soap, tobacco and damp cotton. And everything about this moment is so sharp and lovely, I do something completely out of character and just let myself have it.